across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Nice to have you back. It's 7:06 on this Thursday, May 16th, 2024. You can reach us here at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call us or you can text us. You can also use the Civic Media app, and to learn more about that, head over to civicmedia.us, where you can find out more about the Civic Media radio stations, the ones doing news talk like this one on shows on stations across the state, some others that are local to one particular city, and of course our music stations as well, and where to find Brewers and high school sports and much more. Head over to civicmedia.us, and to learn more about Up North News, head over to upnorthnewswi.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there, and I will tell you what Christina Lurie has put in today's edition of the newsletter coming up in just a moment. But first, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here to tell us about the forecast as we have a rainy morning here on Lake Wissota. But I know what you're thinking. So what about Lake Wissota? What's the weather like in Tigerton?
Why would someone say that?
Well, yeah. People who like Tigerton more than Chippewa Falls, right. Of course. Good morning from Tigerton, says Rob. It's cloudy and 47. Had a great sunrise before it got completely cloudy. And the rain is near the Shawnee Marathon County line, 5 miles from me. I hope Brittany can give us a nice weekend weather-wise. Well, don't we all? I mean,
right?
Yeah.
I think you want that every single week from me, everybody.
Well, yeah, we're a very demanding lot here in Wisconsin. We want our weekend. We don't want a drought, but we also don't want it to rain on any of our plans ever. So.
Oh, I agree. 100%.
That's yes. How it works. Now, I mean, look, we've got some early morning rain here. If that's all we get and things get a little nicer later on in the day, that's a fair trade for me.
I agree with you 100%, and that's going to happen today, at least
see?
For you.
See,
for sure.
Look how good she is. Look how good she is. Tell
you
us
ask,
more.
I'll just snap my fingers and make it happen, everyone. I'm just kidding. I wish it was that easy, but yes, the system isn't too bad. It is pushing through the central Wisconsin right now. Some showers still lingering, of course, across northwestern parts of the state too. So what's going to happen is it's going to continue to push eastward. It'll hit Green Bay, Milwaukee area around lunchtime, but we're just looking at some light to moderate rainfall. There are going to be some thunderstorms embedded in there as well. Some of them could put down some heavy amounts of around 3/4 of an inch of rain, but none are expected to be severe. So it's just a little damp and a little dreary today. And a lot of this will kick out this evening. Now, if you're in northwest Wisconsin or even portions further south, you're already seeing a little bit of sunshine south this morning, but up north, you could see a little bit later on this evening. Central Wisconsin, though, dead in the center. I'm sorry, you're going to see a lot of clouds today. But the sun will be back tomorrow and highs in the mid to upper 70s to near 80 degrees south. So we do have some nice weather right behind us.
It's all been good. You know, again, nobody's going to look at this spring and go, ah, this was terrible. You know, winter lasted forever or it rained every single day or any of that stuff. This has not been a spring, a problematic spring by any stretch.
You're right. It has not been at all. So that's good news.
We got spring. We're lucky.
We got spring. Yes. There's those years. It feels like you go right from winter into summer.
Yeah.
There really are.
Also, something that Rob said that really stuck with me. Do you have that comment up that is, he said something about, was it I say Shawano. I don't know why.
Why do you do that?
I used to do that.
It's a phonics thing. I was raised on phonics, so I look at every single bit of the word, and I wasn't raised near Shawano, so I don't. But my point is, he said the Shawano Marathon County Line. I'm like, County Line? What? What is going on? That's right. I am a lineman for the county. Brittany, sing it. Just you.
It didn't happen yet, but I swear to you, Brittany will join us one of these times. She won't know when or where it comes up, but she'll be there for us.
Overload. Yeah, I'll can sing for your band. All right.
Oh, Brittany. We love you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brittany.
The best.
We'll see you later. We'll see you later today.
or will she? I don't
That's
know.
True. I've changed my mind.
She has to push the button to make it happen.
True.
Coming up later in the hour, we will talk to our friends from Motherhood for Good, who take care of our Women Win Wisconsin segment, and talk to State Representative Lee Snodgrass of the Appleton area. Coming up in just a little bit. Also, a reminder, if you missed us last hour or any hour of your favorite Civic Media talk shows, again, you can head to civicmedia.us and listen to each hour as its own episode. You can do that as a podcast as well. Subscribe to Up North News Radio as a podcast and listen to us hour by hour along the way. Roger had written in with a little musical trivia for this May 16th. This was in 1981, actually from May 16th, 1981, until January 23rd of 1982, there were only three singles that went to number one, in part because Physical by Olivia Newton-John was number one for 10 weeks, Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes was number one for 9 weeks, and Endless Love, Lionel Richie, Diana Ross held the spot for 9 weeks. So a nice little bit of musical trivia from Roger for us for today. We appreciate that so much. Thank you, Roger. I mentioned the newsletter earlier because I wanted to tell you that what Christina has put in there today, Greg, we were talking about how this is the anniversary of Liberace's birthday, that he was born this day in 1919 in West Allis. And Christina has, as Ed McMahon used to like to say, everything. Everything you could want to know about Liberace is in today's Up North News daily newsletter.
I'm going to write that down. Does Ed McMahon impression as well. All right.
Yep. Good. Got to burnish that resume where I can. I fear I'm going to need it real soon. Anyway, his birth name of Vladzu or Wally Valentino Liberace. He immediately had an ear for music. Sam Liberace, his father, encouraged his kids to play, and he could play dozens of classical pieces by memory at the age of seven.
Go on. Yes. Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, his name, his birth name is so beautiful and works with Liberace, Vladzu Valentino Liberace. That works. His father, hi, I'm Sam Liberace.
It is Salvatore, but he went by Sam.
Never mind.
Salvatore Liberace. He. If you see any of the earlier footage in his career, he wore the traditional black tails at the beginning when he was making his TV appearances, but he quickly switched to the flashy costumes that he became famous for. And it's where, again, sometimes I wonder about the era that we live in. It seems so much more open and accepting in so many ways compared to that past era where Liberace was simply known for his flashy costumes and Paul Lynde was known for his double entendres. Yeah. And, you know, but none of them were gay because, of course, there were no gay people, you know, back in the day. They were flashy. They were flamboyant.
I mean,
people can actually live their lives now.
It's like
for the most part.
It's not. I honestly don't think it's so much that was like they're not gay. It's like we just don't want to say it. They're flamboyant. They're flashy. They're expressive, creative, artistic. But like,
don't make me think about their, you know, sexual preferences.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I never thought about Liberace's sexual preference ever. I had things to do. Like, you know, people who. You know, that's a part of their mindset. You know, it's what you were talking about earlier about
the
story time programs read by drag queens. Like, why does this bother you so much? Why does this take up so much space in your brain? It's a drag queen reading to kids. It's fine.
Yeah. If you'd heard that West Allis's own Liberace was coming in to read to kids in his flashy costume, guys would have been great with it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fine. I hope he plays them a little song on a tiny toy piano, you know?
That would have been amazing.
But something else about it, yeah, and that's on you for not being an accepting person. Also, in the newsletter today, did you know Milwaukee was going to have its own tourist tower? On par with the St. Louis Arch or the Seattle Space Needle, or I would add the Large Muskie in Hayward. But Milwaukee did not. There was quite the controversy in the 60s and early 70s about a big old tower that was going to be built downtown. And It's a link to a story that originally appeared in, I believe, Milwaukee Magazine. I don't have it right in front of me, but Christina writes about it and gives you the link to that. Find it in our daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com.
Would that be in addition to those two landmarks, or is it like Milwaukee can have it? Oh, we don't want it. Send it to St. Louis or send it to Seattle.
No.
Like high speed rail.
Yes. Boom. Yeah. Send that away. Reference. We don't want that. Right. What I don't recall the tower one.
Yeah.
But I do recall sometime in the mid-80s, maybe the mid to early to mid-80s, that Milwaukee's longtime mayor, Henry Meyer, talked about putting a fountain just offshore in Lake Michigan, and that it was going to be like the world's tallest tower. It was going to shoot water like as high as what was then, you know, the first Wisconsin building, the big tall building in downtown Milwaukee.
And now it's the Baird or something, Laird or something.
But that would have been really cool.
I mean, I don't know when the last time you've been down to Milwaukee, Pat. The land, the skyline is changing quite a bit. There are new buildings being built. And frankly, if I was one of those people who was investing in building a tall building in Milwaukee, I would throw like a floor or two in there as an observation deck, because even at like 30, 40 stories, you're still going to get a gorgeous view of the city. And it can be a tourist thing.
And I worked in, I shouldn't say I worked in an office on the top floor of, again, what was then the first Wisconsin building. It wasn't an office. It was a closet. I was a temporary worker at the time. And I had like a 2 or 3 day assignment. But it was so cool for those 2 or 3 days. I'm working like on the top floor in a closet, you know, straightening all these files or whatever it was. Because there wasn't like a restaurant, you know, the IDS Center in downtown Minneapolis used to have a restaurant at the top. But again, real estate got to be so in demand and they could get so much more for rent that they ended up closing the restaurant, you know, last I heard. But you're right. Observation decks would work out great. Look at the Sears Tower or whatever they call it now in Chicago.
I call it the Willis Tower just to make my wife mad.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because I don't even think it's called the Willis Tower anymore. I think it's just called Big Tall Building.
It's called that building we still call the Sears Tower. Yeah. The first place, Milwaukee Brewers beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 10-2 yesterday afternoon at American Family Field before beginning a road trip that will go on for 9 games between Houston, then Miami, then Boston. And you can catch Freddy Peralta on the mound tomorrow night in Houston. Pre-game at 6:35 on Civic Media Stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh, and Park Falls. We will unpack more of the news on this Thursday morning, May the 16th, right after this pause here on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlung. Janet Jackson's birthday today. So again, it's obligatory, a little bit of Rhythm Nation 1814 to play for you. I was going to bring up the Packers releasing their 2024 schedule, and I will get to that. There was a story next to that about how Netflix is going to be carrying NFL games on Christmas Day for the next 3 years, because again, we're never going to know what channel to watch for any games. But there's a story right next to it, Greg, if I can call an audible for you. If you wouldn't mind finding Rock Lobster by the B-52s.
Oh, my God. And done.
When I hear it come up, I'll switch to that story. But we'll tell you that the Packers do have their schedule out. We were talking last hour about how all three division games in the home schedule happen to be for the gold package season ticket holders this year. But it also includes a Thanksgiving night game against the Miami Dolphins and much more. So you can check online now and make your plans accordingly for traveling to Green Bay or South America if you want to go to that first game, which is going to be on Peacock. Because, again, it's not mandatory to know where you're getting a game at any given point. But yeah, Netflix also announced a 3-year deal to stream games on Christmas Day. Christmas Day had traditionally been something more for the NBA. They always ran a triple header or a quadruple header on Christmas, and the NFL looked at that and said, well, why don't we walk into that turf as well? So look, nothing for the Packers this year. Their only holiday game this year is Thanksgiving. It kicks off the first of four primetime games in a row, 4 weeks in a row, that the Pack will be playing at 7:25 in the evening. So, you know, plan accordingly. And now we turn our attention to, I think you found our friends over at the B-52s who come from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And in Athens, Georgia, there is a new minor league hockey team that will begin play next season, and they are honoring their city's rich musical heritage by choosing a nickname made famous by one of their most famous bands. The quirky crustacean theme song Rock Lobsters is the new name of the Athens minor league hockey team. The Athens Rock Lobsters were shown appreciation by a statement from the band saying, "Athens, Georgia is our birthplace, where we started our journey down the Atlanta Highway." I should say that differently. "Where we started our journey down the Atlanta Highway."
Nice. They would roam if they want to.
Oh, very nice. Good response there. They said Rock Lobster was one of our very first songs, and we can testify that millions in the galaxy have gone wild to this deep sea surf album anthem. We are truly honored to have our hometown hockey team named the Rock Lobsters. As the song declares, let's rock.
I gotta say, you know, a lot of bands out there, before they record their first record, which that song is on, they write like 10, 15, 20, 30 songs with varying degrees of success and quality. Rock Lobster was one of their first songs. Yeah. This song's their first two albums are necessary listening. Okay, I'm sorry. We're talking about sports now. Didn't mean to be boring.
Oh, no, we were talking about music. We're great.
Yeah.
And the Associated Press story notes that the team did pass on a chance to honor the other most storied act to come out of that area, REM. So they could have named themselves like the Athens, you know, Night Swimmers, or the Athens Losing My Religions, or something.
Athens Dead Post, Dead Letter Office. That's it. That's a deep cut for the REM fans out there.
Yeah, none of that was going to work.
No.
Got in the first grilling of the year yesterday, and don't know that I've asked what is officially in use at the Bach residence. If it's a gas grill, a charcoal grill, or we're not grillers.
It's a, well, you know, by all accounts, if you saw my grill, you would say you're not grillers.
Why is that?
Well, because it's very out of use and very dirty right now. But
oh, okay.
I will say we have a gas grill, and this past Sunday for Mother's Day, my mother-in-law bought a gas grill, and I was in charge. I made chicken wings, salmon, steaks, a little chicken for the dog. And I'm like, all right, I want to get back into this. I think today, if I can get 2 to 3 hours of non-rain, mm-hmm, possible, I'm going to clean the grill real good, and I'm going to mow my lawn. Sorry, no mow May people. It's just, it's not happening on my property.
Well, no, especially if there's grilling to be done. You have to, you know, machete a path to get to the grill.
Exactly. So
that's why we have to.
What about you?
Charcoal all
nice.
The way.
Okay.
And again, right, you know, if you know, folks who have propane, that is totally fine, but I prefer that. So one of my daughters got me a really nice charcoal grill a couple of years back for Christmas, and got it all put together. And I'm like, what is this thing that I have to build on the side of it? That included a smoker and a smoker attachment. And I had never been a smoker. And I don't think she knew that either. I think she was like, oh, maybe that's a place where you put some baked potatoes or something. But so I've only used it once, because you felt like you had to try something out, and it turned out all right. But as you know, that's like a day long thing.
So Matt, one of the co-owners of the Laughing Tap, he is a huge, like, he's really big into smoking. He has now two smokers, and he plans it out. He's like, I'm gonna make, like, he just made pulled pork the other day, and he brought it in, and I told him, I was like, I'd pay for this sandwich at a food truck. That's how good it is. And it's, yeah, depending on what you're making, it's a 3 hour process. It's a 12 hour process, and a lot of monitoring, temperature gauging, all that stuff. And just like, I like a gas grill, turn it on, make the food, turn it off, eat.
Oh, exactly. I mean, look, it's all I can do to get through an episode of Top Chef and say they made something with cranberries, much less all of the detail that goes into this, which we'll talk to Luke Mathers about that in just a little bit. But yeah, to sit and I was going to say babysit basically a smoker. It's all I can do to flip those brat patties, you know, and not have them turn into hockey pucks. Alicia writes in on Facebook, I enjoy my Blackstone in the summer. I know other people are like big green egg type grill.
Yeah.
People.
I don't know the name of it.
There's Traeger.
Traeger. Yeah.
And then there's the little tiny grills that you use in the parking lot. When you're tailgating,
little Smokey Joe
Family Field, well, yeah, something like that, which I enjoy very much.
I didn't know they're called Big Green Egg. Okay, wow, they are expensive. Holy monkeys!
You've not seen that before. Well, then that explains maybe why you haven't seen many of them. Yes, it's.
If anyone from the Big Green Egg Company is listening, we're happy to take a free sample of one of your Big Green Egg grills. I will take it home and give it a fair review.
A fair review. Yeah, that's for what they're shipping your way. And, you know, the more I think about it, I don't actually know if I've met more than one person that has. I see them in stores all the time.
Yeah.
But whether they actually get purchased,
I don't know. I'm not in that culture enough. I feel like that's nothing against the company. I've heard it's a very high quality piece of equipment, but I also feel like it's, you know, it's name brand, you know, you have like you've got a MacBook or you've got the you know what, I don't buy fancy expensive things, so but yeah, I'm sure they're great, but I don't know anyone who owns one either. My friends who are really into it have Traegers, and my other friends just build their own like smokers and things like that.
Yeah, very nice. Whatever you have, it's nice to have spring here finally and get to use it. So hope you get to enjoy yours as much as I did with mine last night. Our friend State Representative Lee Snodgrass joins all of our friends from Motherhood for Good who join us on our Women Win Wisconsin segment next on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Reitlow. Welcome back. It's time for our weekly Motherhood for Good segment powered by, let's try that again. It's time for our Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by Motherhood for Good. Nicole, Kate, you guys are just powerhouses. I have to lead the segment with you guys now instead of the title. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Very good. Nice to have you here. And nice to have Lee Snodgrass back as well, Democrat from Appleton in the Fox Valley. I'm assuming, I don't know how all the races go. So, Lee, you're breaking some news if the answer surprises me, but you're running for re-election, right?
I am running for re-election.
Okay, good. I didn't,
third term.
Didn't want to get ahead of myself here.
Nope.
And then so Kate, Nicole, because of my conversation an hour ago with Joe Zepecki, would you indulge me if I did a little follow-up question on the legislature before we dive into all your questions for
all means, of course.
So, Representative Snodgrass, we were talking to Joe Zepecki about the Republican senators who came into session day before yesterday to try to override vetoes. It wasn't good. They have a supermajority there. They don't in the assembly, of course. And so the whole thing was a stunt. But I asked Joe, now that that's done, I said, is that it now? Because I know that assembly Democrats have had to essentially be on guard in case of a snap session. And we were discussing that and weren't entirely sure. So Lee, what's the status now between now and January when the new legislature comes into session? Do you still have to be watching out for these kinds of political tricks?
It'll be very unlikely. So what happened at the end of yesterday, in the beginning of the year when we're all first elected, we vote on a calendar. The Republicans set the calendar and it sets all possible session days. So yesterday was the last possible day where procedurally they could take up a veto override. And at 6 p.m. yesterday, that was over. So based on the calendar, on what's scheduled, there's no way that they can do that again. However, they could call an extraordinary session, but I think we've all seen that they don't like to show up for session days that the governor calls. And I certainly don't think that they'll be calling their own, because they have so many exiting members already. They have people who've moved on to other opportunities. It'd be very difficult for them to get all the Republicans they need for an override back to Madison.
Well, look, when you're on a 10-month paid vacation that you've given yourself, I mean, you don't want to do a bit more than is absolutely necessary. So thank you for straightening that out. Let's see. I think I started with Kate last time. Nicole, you want me to throw your first Motherhood for Good question over to you this week?
Absolutely. Sounds right. Good. Well, thank you, Lee, for joining us again. My question is, I believe your district has changed, and I know kicking off a re-election campaign and then having the wonderful new maps with that, obviously some changes for you. Could you tell us a little bit about your new district and how you're kind of navigating that?
Yeah, so I get a new number. I'm one of a handful of reps that get a new number. I'm currently in the 57th Assembly District. The new one is 52, so I'm calling it the new 52, of course. What happens in my new district is I used to have Menasha. They've now reunited Menasha and Nina in those sister cities into a new district, which is 53. So going back to my district, and replacing Menasha, I move north into North Appleton. So north of 41, I now have all three of the high schools, north, east, and west in my district. And then I move a little bit west as well. So I have some really kind of great places there. I've got Fox Valley Technical College, the Timber Rattler Stadium, the Champion Center. So I have some real cool new parts of Appleton. Now, they're not new to me. I've lived in Appleton for 30 years. My kids attended North High School, but they're new in terms of being able to officially represent them. So I'm excited.
So when you do get reelected, are you going to be able to throw out the first pitch at a Timber Rattlers game?
You know, I actually had a tour of the Timber Rattler Stadium, a private tour, just me last week, I believe it was. And we did talk about a legislative day. So there is a possibility. And I did go down the big slide. They have a slide there now that's kind of like the Bernie slide, but everybody can go down. And I went down it.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so obviously you've been in the Assembly now for a while, and we kind of are familiar with some of your main priorities. Could you talk a little bit about them to our listeners, and also maybe, you know, looking ahead to these new maps and hopefully having quite a bit more Democratic representation in the Assembly? Are there any shifts with policy priorities in terms of like what you're hopeful might get a little bit more traction and what you guys might be pushing a little bit more? In the hopes that you have a better chance of getting some passage of some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. We're going for 15 seats. We're going for the majority. There's no better time for us to make a real play for it. So we've been recruiting for colleagues. We're not recruiting for candidates. We're recruiting for people that we want to work with and we know will do good work by our side. Democrats have been, we have had an agenda that we've been trying to get, you know, so we're ready. We've got all the bills and all of the things ready to go. We'd like to see, obviously, taking that Medicaid expansion. We'd like to see overturning some of our anti-labor laws. We'd like to see being able to fully invest in public schools, making sure that students and teachers have the resources that they need. We want to make sure that our climate bills are moving forward. And we want to make sure that we're providing equal opportunity for everybody in the state to be successful, whether that be housing, whether that be healthcare, whether that be access to, you know, healthy food. Personally, I would really like to see some of my bills on bicycling infrastructure move forward, complete streets, et cetera. I'd like to see my pollinator protection bills move forward. And I'd really just like to see us, you know what, protecting democracy. I'd like to be able to make sure that everybody who can legally vote can easily vote and it's convenient and we make sure that we have as many people voting as possible.
No, that's super great to hear. And obviously, any and all of those would be wonderful to see moving ahead. I know just picking out one thing to talk about, the childcare crisis. Would love to hear your thoughts on there are some tangible, easy things that we could start to do to make that happen. Obviously, that has not been able to move forward. But could you tell us a little bit about what you would like to see happen there and what kind of solutions could, you know, or will be on the horizon when we get those new 15 new colleagues of yours?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I talk to people in the district, their top three things that they talk about, and childcare is always one of them, always in the top three. And I really think it's the responsibility. It's like a three-pronged approach. I do think the state has a responsibility. I mean, a lot of people have said to me, you don't really think that the state should subsidize childcare. And I've said, you know, it's a workforce issue. And if the state cares about making sure we don't have people at the upper end of their earning potential retiring early to take care of their grandchildren, and we don't have families making a decision to take one parent out of the workforce, then the state needs to really, you know, have a say here. So I think it's private industry. I think it's the state. I think it's families. It's sort of like that three-legged stool. But one of the things that we need to really do is make sure it's a viable career path, because right now it's hard to recruit into early childhood education and childcare because these people who we entrust with our most valuable resources are not getting paid a living wage. So we have to make sure that there's professional development, that there's opportunities for them actually to be able to pay their own bills and pay themselves. We have childcare providers who are not paying themselves, and that just cannot be happening anymore.
Absolutely.
So true. Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry.
And then pivoting to another issue that I know is important to you and obviously many of us here is reproductive rights and kind of restoring and protecting the rights there for women. Obviously, it's been a big issue in elections lately since Dobbs. How do you expect that to play out in your campaign, in this election cycle? What are you hearing when you're talking to constituents and things like that in your area?
It's still a big topic. In fact, in collecting signatures in North Appleton. So North Appleton is what we would call ex-urban. It's kind of larger properties and larger homes. And a lot of the people I'm talking to are women at the doors, and they have all been really excited to have an opportunity to basically vote for a representative for the first time in their district who has a chance of winning and who will uphold their right to make those personal, private, reproductive decisions themselves. I know that the economy is another huge thing, but number two is always abortion rights. And you'd be surprised, there are people who kind of whisper to me and say, he's not going to vote for your candidate, but I'm going to vote for you because I care about these things. So that's 100%. We're going to continue to fight to make sure that the law is clear, to make sure that Wisconsin gets that ban off the books, regardless of what a court will say. We want to make sure that legislatively that we are absolutely preserving the right to have an abortion if you so choose, in the state of Wisconsin.
Can you tell us more about how you got your own starts in here before you were running for legislature, some of your prior experience and you know, what you were doing even before that? What brought you into all of this mess that we're so thankful for?
As a mom of young kids, I was always somebody who was working for campaigns. You know, I volunteered for the Democratic candidate for president and for governor. And after the 2016 election, when I saw the results, I thought, you know, I have to ratchet it up a notch. So I ran for county party chair in Outagamie County and was able to get that seat, was able to, you know, double the membership of our group and actually make it family friendly. That was one of my things. I said, people aren't going to come to county party meetings unless we do it at a time when they can provide, you know, we can provide, you know, childcare, or we can have amusement for the children who want to come, if we want families, we want to grow the party. And then after that, I was asked to join the ticket with Ben Wickler for second vice chair of the state party. And I served in that role until I got into the legislative role. And that happened because I was recruiting for candidates in 2018 to run against Roger Roth in the state Senate. Nobody would do it. And Jennifer Schilling wore me down and told me that I should try to do it. So I did. I lost, but it's still, of all the things I've done politically, one of the things I'm most proud of.
Jen Schilling is a former Democratic leader who, has that effect on people. So I'm not a bit surprised, because I was serving as a county party chair at the same time, roughly. And so, I mean, folks were pointing at you, you know, from my first day there, saying what a great job that you were doing running the organization there. And so talk to me a little bit about that whole network of progressives, because we talk to Kristen Lilley all the time, who says, you know, just outlines all the ways that these counties are no longer in the silos that they used to be. There's much more talking with each other. And I think that's not just a function of the party, but of folks like Kate and Nicole and other, you know, local neighborhood groups who are saying, we've got to talk these things through, get to know each other, and organize.
Yeah, I mean, we have a scarcity of resources. People are busy. They have other things to do. So anytime we can eliminate redundancies by, coordinate with one another, there are all sorts of grassroots networks that are, you know, building a coalition based on issues. And then there are county parties who tend to focus more on candidates. So when you get people who are issues focused and people who are candidate focused, and you unite them together, you have an army of progressive voices and and, you know, foot leather and people on the ground to make things happen. So it's a really actually exciting time to be in Wisconsin.
No, that's great. And I think just building off of that, something you do so well, just being someone who follows you on social media and whatnot, is how connected you are to the people. So I think your ability to connect with your constituents, your interactions with them, can you talk about, was that something that came naturally? Is that something, I mean, I can't imagine every one of those interactions is perfect.
Well, I kind of joke about, you know, 6 degrees of separation. I said in our area, it's 2 degrees of Lee Snodgrass, which is both a positive and a negative.
No, you know everyone. Yeah.
Can you put that on a shirt, by the way?
You know, I think it's just that I don't stand back. If I'm curious about something, I introduce myself and I ask questions to learn more. And when you do that as a habit in life, you're going to make those connections. So I do think, thank you for recognizing that, because I think one of the most fun things I can do and one of the things I'm best at is connecting people. And I love it. And that's how I legislate. I say that I'm locally focused and community oriented. And there's hardly ever a door that I knock where they don't open the door and say, it's Lee Snodgrass. So
usually like that, but you know,
yeah,
sometimes, well, yeah. I sometimes get the, it's Pat Kreitlow. So it happens. Kate, over at Motherhood for Good, you know, give us a little pitch on what we're working on and talking about out there. People can find you on Instagram.
Yeah, we're on Instagram at Motherhood for Good. We are, you know, talking about some federal stuff, but also we're going to be getting a lot deeper and talking a lot more about these local elections and the races that people really need to pay attention to, who they can donate to, and definitely volunteer with if they're in those areas. Because Lee, I'm sure it helps a lot to have people in those areas stepping up and getting involved, like you said, when they can, as they're able. It doesn't need to be all the time. They can, I'm sure, bring their kids to stuff. So yeah, we just want to be highlighting those races and helping pick up those 15 seats, flip the assembly, so we can get more policy issues that most people care about.
Get Lee some colleagues. And next week, one of her colleagues, Assembly Democratic Leader Greta Neubauer, will be joining us in it. Watch this space. We will be here. Lee Snodgrass, so good to see you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great opportunity.
Great day down there and safe travels. And Nicole and Kate, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks.
All right. Time to get into last night's Top Chef Wisconsin with Luke Mathers next. You're up north. Tomorrow on the program, our usual Friday lineup, but augmented a bit in a very good way. Not only former U.S. Attorney and civic media host Jim Santel, not only Dan Schumacher, and not only Mark Jacob, but along with Mark Jacob, another Chicago News veteran, Jennifer Schultz, is going to join us and talk about the debate over presidential debates and other ways the national media has covered the big stories of the week. But it is Thursday morning, 7:51, and that is when we turn to what we were watching on TV last night. The, what was it, 9th episode, he said, throwing his notes all over the place. Yes, episode 9 of Top Chef Wisconsin. Luke Mathers, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you doing?
Well, I'm very good. I really enjoyed last night's episode entitled The Good Land, to help us better appreciate indigenous cuisine. And it led to some interesting challenges, some that were unexpected, but we started with one that was definitely expected. If you're going to talk about indigenous cuisine, you're going to talk about cranberries.
Yes, it was expected that we were going to get to cranberries at some point this season with Wisconsin. Surprisingly enough, we've seen, as the candidates have been narrowing down, you get a little bit more screen time for each of the chef testants. And so, therefore, you get to know who's competing now a little bit better. And one of the chefs, Savannah, actually had on her board, they started off the episode with her in her hotel room. Her mirror was
a whiteboard, basically.
Essentially, yeah. It was a markings of all these different brainstorms of what she thought would come next, and cranberries was on the list. So she was pretty much right on the mark when it came to getting ready for the quickfire, and they changed some of the rules of the game right off the bat. It took me a little while to shake, you know, Alice Cooper saying the good land over and over again in the back of my head.
Right.
But then we got into the quickfire because both Tom and Gail, two of the main judges, Tom Colicchio, the real creator of Top Chef, was there with Kristen for the quickfire, letting the contestants know that now their quickfire dishes will be part of the elimination. It's under consideration for who goes home each and every week now.
And the things that they made with, again, with cranberries. Look, I've really got to tip my hat to Rachel Bernard of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I can't write this stuff down fast enough. And so she notes, Sue made beef carpaccio with berry and beet chutney. Manny made a pork tenderloin with brandy and cranberry sauce. Dan's salt and pepper scallops with cranberry red curry. And Amanda's take on chicken and waffles with corn and cranberry hoe cake with fried chicken. Again, I'm just amazed at, and they have to come up with this like right now. Here's cranberries. Here's, what was it? 30 minutes, right?
Yes.
Here's 30 minutes. Go. I'm amazed every week at how they pull this stuff off. But like you said, we learned a little bit that they're definitely thinking about these things ahead of time, about the possibilities.
Yes. And so it's definitely a very important set of skills for these contestants when it comes to who's going to take home the title of Top Chef, being able to quickly think on their feet. And now those stakes are raised even a little bit higher when it comes to those quickfires, because depending on how they do in those challenges, it could be the difference maker at final table, whether or not they're going home or whether or not they're staying in the competition.
And so then it was time to meet some of the guest judges who represented several indigenous communities, not just in Wisconsin, but in other places as well. And I thought it was great that they allowed them to essentially sample, get some ideas, because mm-hmm. before you can throw them into an entirely different culture of cooking, you give them kind of a sense. And so there was this great dinner there where they had smoked walleye, some white bean spreads, wild rice patties, bison, sweet potatoes with dandelion greens. I think I might have passed on the dandelion greens, but
until you try them.
Well, yeah, that's true. so they did, and it gave them some ideas of where they wanted to go from there.
Yeah, it was as many of the contestants and the judges were talking about, the best way to learn about a culture is to start with the food. And so they all had the opportunity to do that. It was, I think, eye-opening for a number of the chefs still on the season. There was a question at that table that was asked, how many of you have dined at an indigenous restaurant before? And all eight of the remaining contestants weren't able to say that they had, because that's how rare indigenous cuisine is, not only here in Wisconsin, but around the country. And so it's definitely a growing movement, and it was really great to see Wisconsin's indigenous culture highlighted on last night's episode.
Very much so. So I mentioned bison, but for their elimination dishes, there was elk that was tried. And then there was rabbit from Michelle. Michelle's one of my favorites. She runs a barbecue joint, and so her barbecue skills have really come in handy. And so she picked rabbit, and she loved the way it turned out initially. And then she made this one decision that almost kicked her out of the competition. She thought she'd crisp it up a little bit in a pizza oven.
And that overcooked it.
And overcooked it. It turned out to be dry. So then she tried some au jus to maybe, help bring some more moisture to it. But it made her polenta cake soggy. So she was on the verge of going if she hadn't had such a good dish in the quick fire challenge. And so instead, she was still there, but it led to two eliminations.
Yes, the double elimination that had been talked about since two chefs came back from the first round of Last Chance Kitchen happened last night. So two chefs had to pack their knives. But I think it's also important to highlight Dan Jacobs, the hometown kid from Milwaukee, was one of the top dishes again in his highlighting of the sunflower, and his dish almost beating out Danny's, or excuse me, Savannah's.
Savannah's, yeah.
But Savannah, Dan, and Danny were the top three. Savannah taking it home with another savory pastry dish. But Dan, the hometown kid, almost taking the best dish again for the possible second week in a row, but he was a runner-up.
And now, because, again, of Rachel Bernhardt's excellent story, we have a plot twist. Careful, spoiler alert ahead. So Amanda and Laura, who were eliminated last night, we're going to go to Last Chance Kitchen, which is a different program, with Kevin, who ousted Rosica after a last-minute return. She was there because Kalina, who was eliminated last week, excused herself from the competition in a shocking twist. Not to me, because I just didn't think Kalina was gonna catch on. So I'm not surprised. But and then finally, next week, two things. A meat raffle. And a Door County fish boil. They are going all in on Wisconsin cooking on this, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the season, and it's really exciting to see with the few weeks that we have left how much or what else they're going to highlight of Wisconsin in the remaining episodes.
And Greg Bach with his chef test and envy was on his best behavior today. I can't thank you enough, Greg.
I was thinking about something else.
He's thinking about baseball. He's looking at his Brewers shirt on.
Thank you, Mr. Mathers. Have a great day. Thanks to all of you. We'll do it again Friday morning, 6 a.m. See you then.